Since the 1800s, Hickok & Boardman Insurance Group has been providing quality service and peace of mind to our clients. With our offices in Burlington, Stowe, and St. Albans, and our Dennis Ricker & Brown offices in Montpelier and Lynnonville, we are here when you need us.
And now WDEV FM and AM presents our two-hour public affairs program, Open Mic with Mike Smith. Important topics, topical guests, and your phone calls. And now here's the host of Open Mic, Mike Smith.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us this morning. In the first hour on today's program, we'll speak with Jasper Craven of Vermont Digger. He's a Vermont Digger reporter, and he wrote a story about Bernie Sanders' national media buyer. The story is entitled, Sanders Campaign, Millions Go to Mystery Firm. Really, really interesting story that raises a lot of questions. And then Don Terrell, the finance chair of the Vermont Republican Party, she's attending the convention in Cleveland. She'll share her perspective on the GOP convention. After we check in with our colleagues at Talk Media News, I'll open up the phone lines to ask you to share your opinions of the Republican National Convention, as well as the Vermont governor's race, including Sue Mentor's statement that gun control will be the top priority. We'll ask you, do you agree that gun control is the top priority of the governor's race? And Bruce Lisman, spending what may be $2 million in the primary, is it helping him? But first, let's turn our attention to presidential politics. And on the line with us this morning on Open Mic is Jasper Craven from Vermont Digger. Good morning, Jasper.
Good morning.
Jasper, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're fading a little bit. Can you? But we're going to continue just to make sure that we can do this. Jasper, campaigns use media buyers to place their ads on TV and radio. And the Sanders campaign uses Old Town Media. Who is Old Town Media?
Old Town Media is a limited liability company that was started in April 2014. Its location given in Virginia corporation papers is a residential area in Alexandria, Virginia. There's not much actually really known about the media buying agency. There's no website. There's no public phone number. There's no list of past clients, which is fairly irregular for a media buying agency, especially one that has got such lucrative work that this campaign season. Old Town Media has been the media buying wing for Bernie Sanders' campaign. So basically what they do is once the ads have been created and the ads are made by Tad Devine, who was a senior strategist in the campaign, members basically do the work of signing contracts and brokering contracts with stations across the country in getting those ads up on the airwaves.
And based on the national ad buy that the Sanders campaign did, what is the estimation of the income Old Town Media has made from the Sanders campaign?
So the Sanders campaign spent more money than any primary campaign, either Republican or Democrat, this primary season. They spent $82 million on getting ads up on the airwaves, which is roughly, it's less than half of all they brought in, but just barely. And so $82 million has been spent getting ads on the airwaves. And of that $82 million, roughly $12 million went to Old Town Media and commission. On every media buy, they get a 15% commission.
And so what's raising concerns about this particular agency?
So there's a number of sort of troubling questions that arise. The agency is so secretive with how business is done. If you look at Hillary Clinton's media buying agency, for example, it's an agency called GMMB. It has multiple locations. It's a worldwide media agency, big presence online, as well as a reputation for doing political campaigns. Old Town was started in 2014, and basically all of the work has been for Bernie. They did a little bit of ad work for a super PAC in Ohio, but all the profits have basically come in through Bernie. And so I've been speaking with a number of lawyers who are sort of expert in LLC and election law, and what they tell me is that when there are these entities that are set up chiefly sort of to bring in money right before an election, it raises questions that people close to the campaign may be involved in, that this is sort of a shell company that's basically set up just to sort of bring in profits in a sort of secretive way. That there's not any real disclosure required of LLCs. You don't have to name the members, and there aren't any annual reports that need to be filed. Basically, through an LLC, you can set it up, become a member, not disclose the members, and sort of take in as much money as you want. Now, Tad Devine admitted to the Washington Post a few months ago that he knew the buyers here at Old Town, that he was getting some of the money as well, which raises some questions regarding his role on the campaign. I mean, if he's the senior strategist, yet he's also making millions from ad buys, you wonder if, you know, he was really railing and asserting that advertising was always sort of the chief strategy in this campaign. I mean, Bernie really did spend a lot of money on ads, and a number of former staffers I spoke to said that they thought there was too much spending on ads. So it raises questions because it appears that Tad Devine is getting a lot of this commission money. It's also clear that two of the other buyers who have taken in a good chunk of money from the Old Town buys are these two women, Shelley Hartig and Barbara Bougie. Now, these are two women who worked actually with Jane Sanders in 2006 on Bernie's Senate race. And so there's a connection between Jane here. And the reason that is significant is because in that 2006 race between Rich Tarrant and Sanders, it was revealed that in the past, Jane had actually been doing a lot of the media buys in the Vermont market for Bernie in 2002 and 2004. She brought in around $30,000. Bernie's stepdaughter, Karina Driscoll, also made a good amount of money in consulting and media strategy on those early House races. So while there has been no sort of evidence I could find that Jane has been involved here or profited off Old Town Media, there's a connection with these two women and Jane. And while I haven't found anything, sort of the rules and regulations surrounding LLCs make it very hard to know much of anything.
In fact, you're not the only one that's sort of been stymied about this. Other reporters, including the New York Times, were shut down when they tried to find out some information. The Washington Post wrote about how a small company like this got a huge contract. Slate described the company as a front company. How did the Sanders campaign respond to you?
So I've been trying to look through as many public documents as are available for the past number of weeks to see if I could get any more information just publicly around who's actually making these ad buys. Now, the Federal Communication Commission requires that every time there's one of these media contracts made, that's publicly available. So there's thousands and thousands of these contracts. And in the contracts, the media buyers have to sign their names. And so that's where I got the names of Barbara Bougie and Shelley Hartig, the women who worked with Jane. But, you know, in exploring LLC law in the state of Virginia where this is incorporated, I found out that there's really no other sort of avenue to find out if Jane or any other people close to the campaign, frankly, were sort of members of this LLC and therefore were taking in ad profits. So after that, I mean, I was also, one way to find out would be through the tax returns of Jane and Bernie, though they've only released 2014, and therefore there's not a very clear picture on the finances of those two. But so then I just decided to start asking questions. I called Tad Devine, the senior strategist, probably a dozen times, never got a response on both his cell number as well as his the number of his work. I called the two women a number of times. They're actually also partners at Canal Media. So these two women are partners at a media buying firm called Canal Media Partners currently. They still have active numbers there in offices. So it's also a little bit puzzling why the money wouldn't and the ad buying wouldn't go through this Canal Media Partners company, which is a more established company. It appears that these two women set up this LLC shell company with the express purpose of sort of trying to put a veil over the work. I mean, if they have an active ad buying company now, it seems odd that would not be the company to get the work. But reached out to them. I called Jane up, and she had a sort of very quick conversation with me, said she had another call on the other line and sort of rejected that she had any involvement with Old Town Media. She said, you know, something to the effect of, I don't even know what Old Town Media is, and then she hung up. Now, you know, in talking to former national staffers who were at a fairly high level, they dismissed that immediately and said, of course, Jane knows what Old Town Media is. She has been a very close advisor on everything from media to messaging to all sorts of stuff. So Jane obviously has a role in advising on media strategy, but it's still unclear what exactly that role is because Jane would not disclose that. I also ran into spokesman Michael Briggs at the Portsmouth, New Hampshire endorsement event where Sanders endorsed Clinton, and he was sort of unwilling to really talk to me about the firm either.
With all of this, I mean, we go back to 2006 and when it became an issue in the campaign when it was discovered Jane was making $30,000 out of these media buys, but she says she had volunteered that money and donated it. Her daughter received $65,000 for work on the campaign. Is there anything illegal here?
There is nothing illegal in what Jane was doing in 2002 and 2004. Federal Election Commission rules state that on a campaign you are allowed to hire a member of your family as long as you basically don't give them a special rate, you know, and pay more than the industry average, and also to ensure that the rules require that they're doing a job, you know, that is required, and it's not sort of just trying to fluff them with some cash. So it was not illegal, and, you know, even after the revelations came about, Bernie really trounced Karen in that 2006 race, so it didn't really stick. So there's nothing really illegal here. I mean, when these revelations came out in 2006, the Tarrant people really jumped on it and said, you know, Jane is making money from the campaign, therefore Bernie is making money because, you know, that they obviously share in each other's finances. So there are some ethical questions raised. I mean, sort of the biggest one for me, which I haven't yet been able to answer, is just whether the fact that Tad Devine, who we know was making profits off ad buys, and perhaps other people in the campaign at a high level, whether they were really pushing an aggressive media strategy partially for their own financial gain. I mean, as I alluded to earlier, there was a lot of advertising, a lot of media in this campaign. And, you know, I understand that at the beginning, Bernie was sort of an unknown entity, and they really put a lot of money in. They had some great ads. I'm sure you can recall the America ad with the Simon and Garfunkel song, some really poignant, well-done ads that I'm sure helped introduce Sanders to America. Yet, you know, in sort of the waning weeks of the primary calendar, when Sanders did not have as much money, there were a lot of staffers who were saying, listen, we need to focus on organizing. That's what wins these states. And oftentimes that was ignored in order to roll out an aggressive media strategy. The two sort of most prominent instances of that were in New York, both of those. And who knows if he would have won if he had a more aggressive organizational strategy on the ground. But staffers told me that they thought sometimes the media was just prioritized too much.
I sort of had to chuckle when I read the piece that it seems like a Colorado firm, Old Town Media, but without the E as the media firm that we're talking about now, is getting a lot of calls lately. Can you explain why?
Yeah, so, you know, in these media contracts I was going over with the FCC, I was looking for a number. You know, I was trying to find a number to get in touch with these people and ask some questions. And on these contracts, there's a space where you can leave the number for the firm. And that was never given, except in one instance there was a number given. So I said, okay, well, I found a number. And I called up the number. And I, you know, they answered very cordially, Old Town Media, and so I started asking to speak to either Shelley Hartig or Barbara Bougie, and then immediately the woman said, "Oh, okay, great. You know, this is another person looking for Bernie's Old Town Media." Now, what I had done was I had actually called a media firm in Colorado, not in Alexandria, Virginia, called Old Town Media. They don't do any political media buys. They're sort of a lifestyle media agency in Colorado, and I guess they've been getting calls for months from people interested in the Alexandria firm, but they of course are not the right one. As you said, in the Alexandria firm, town is spelled T-O-W-N-E, sort of in the old way, whereas the Colorado firm, it's just T-O-W-N. And so eventually the people put up a statement on their website saying, "We're not Bernie's ad firm. Please stop calling us. We're getting hate mail. Just leave us alone," basically. So, yeah, oddly enough, there's this other firm in Colorado with a similar name, but no connection.
We're speaking with Jasper Craven from Vermont Digger, and we're talking about an article entitled "Sanders Campaign Millions Go to Mystery Firm." The mystery firm is their media buyer called Old Town Media with an E after town. One of the things that I would think any sort of income from these ad buys would show up if, in fact, anybody in the Sanders family had income coming in would be on the senator's financial disclosure form. Would that show up there, Jasper?
So that's sort of a complicated question. So there are federal disclosure rules that were implemented in 1978 as sort of a Watergate ethics reform package. And they require pretty thorough disclosure from a member of Congress, someone running for president, a potential member of the Supreme Court, anyone running for federal office. But the requirements for the spouse are not as as sort of comprehensive. So the 2015 disclosure for Sanders was released or filed, I suppose, about a week ago. And I looked that over, and there was nothing on the disclosure from Jane as the spouse listing Old Town Media. And so I was like, okay, well, there you go. That might be sort of the answer to my questions. You know, Jane perhaps has not been involved or made any money off Old Town. I will say that most of the money taken in by Old Town was actually in 2016, not 2015. Sort of, you know, 2016 was when the primary calendar happened. But you know, there was some media buys in 2015, so she definitely could have been connected then. And so I was looking into it further, however, and there was actually a case when Hillary Clinton's campaign released their federal disclosure. It was the same document, and the same things required. But the Associated Press found that in that disclosure, Bill Clinton, as the spouse, had not disclosed LLC. Called WJC LLC, which I believe are his initials. And he didn't have to disclose that that connection to an LLC because there were no financial assets attached to it. So there were LLCs that he disclosed in the report, you know, which were from legitimate businesses with employees, with bank accounts, sort of other assets that are typical of a company. However, if a company is, if an LLC is sort of used for the other purpose, not a legitimate business, but sort of more as a pass-through shell entity, and there are no financial assets attached to it, it's basically just used in order to get money through, then there's actually a loophole where you don't have to disclose. So Bill Clinton did not disclose this LLC he was a part of, and he did not have to. The Associated Press found out about it in some dogged reporting. And so that sort of showed to me that there are loopholes for spouses. So depending on how legit a business Old Town Media is, would sort of depend on whether it needed to be disclosed. Now, this is sort of a hard question to answer because, again, it's been very hard to get any details on Old Town Media. But I think some of these red flags, including the fact that there's no business address, the fact that it's a home address listed, the fact that there doesn't seem to be employees, a website, that it basically appears to be used to funnel money, makes it likely that there were no financial assets attached to it, and therefore, if Jane was attached to Old Town Media, which, again, I do not know, that she might not have had to disclose.
Jasper, great reporting. A lot of questions still unanswered. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Mike.
Jasper Craven, Vermont Digger. Coming up, Don Terrell, Finance Chair of the Vermont Republican Party, calling in to tell us what's happening at the Republican National Convention. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. Just to give you a heads up on what we plan to do, we're going to have Don Terrell on the line just in a second here. She's the chair of the Vermont she's the finance chair of the Vermont GOP. She's attending the convention in Cleveland, and she'll share her perspective on the GOP convention. And after we check in with our colleagues at Talk Media News, I'll open up the phone lines to ask you to share your opinions on the Republican National Convention, as well as the Vermont governor's race, including Sue Minter's statement that gun control will be her top priority. Do you agree with that, that gun control is the top priority of the governor's race? And Bruce Lisman spending what may be $2 million in the primary. Is it helping him? We'll ask you and your opinion coming up in the second hour. But it's my pleasure to welcome to the Open Mic Show Don Terrell, the finance chair of the Vermont Republican Party. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Mike.
Don, what is your role at the convention?
I'm hanging out. No, I'm actually an alternate delegate. So I decided this year at the Vermont State Convention that I would run to be a delegate here at the National Convention. And we elected 13 delegates and 13 alternates. And I won the seat as an alternate. I'm alternate number 5.
And in your estimation, because you get to see the convention just like you're seated differently than the delegates, but you get to see all the events at the convention. In your estimation, what does Donald Trump have to do to unite the delegates coming out of this convention?
Oh, I think Donald Trump has to do exactly what he is doing. We have just seen a continual lineup of speaker after speaker for 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, just talking about the country, talking about Donald Trump himself and trying to give people the perspective of who he is as a person. I think yesterday, hearing from his kids was really, a lot of the delegates are talking about that, just how poised his kids are and the message that they're conveying about Donald Trump. So, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens in the upcoming, what are there, 13 weeks to the election, and what we're going to continue to hear about who Donald Trump is and who he's going to surround himself with.
In your opinion, on a national issue, on the national basis, what is the number one issue the Republicans need to run on this year?
The number one issue that was really shaping up first day of the convention was around safety, public safety, dealing with the threats of terrorism. You know, we're riding in the car on the way here Sunday. My husband and I drove out here, and we're hearing about the shootings in Baton Rouge. And, you know, while that's not terrorism, it's, you know, on our soil, people are so concerned about just the unrest that is building as a result of terrorism and as a result of what appears to just be concern about our law enforcement, and attacks on our law enforcement, I think, are pretty scary to everybody. It was scary to folks as we were coming to the convention. There was, you know, some trepidation after hearing that on Sunday. The convention was kicking off Sunday night. I missed the welcome event. But on Monday, security here has been very tight, but it's been fabulous. We certainly feel safe.
And just describe security for a moment. What do you have to go through?
So security is security here. We've sort of been chuckling. We're getting through much quicker than we do at airports and such. But in general, security is we all have credentials that we're wearing. We are bused from our hotels to the convention center. There are no cars that can drive into the convention area. So security is tight in that regard. They've sort of locked down the entire area around the convention. There are police everywhere. So we have police officers stationed right at our hotel, and we are probably about 10 miles from the convention hall itself. When we go in, you know, just like an airport, security is you can only bring, you know, certain things, and you have to have some things in a clear bag so they can see it. They search through purses. I carried a water in. They made sure that I took a sip of it on my way in. So you go through kind of the same screening process. They do not have the actual screening equipment, so it's just all hand assessments.
Don, what do you hope to gain from this experience?
This experience is, number one, for Vermont, you know, it's a group of delegates that have come here, and what I had always heard in the past was, you know, the delegates come, they get to know each other better, you know, and build some unity to bring back to Vermont. That absolutely is happening with our team. We've got a great group that is here. You know, and we spend a lot of time together. We're doing breakfast, et cetera. We are sitting together in the convention hall. But, you know, I also just, it's great to get an appreciation for the party outside of Vermont. Vermont is, you know, considered a blue state, although we haven't been blue all that long when you really go back to it in history. The delegates have been talking about that a lot this week. And it's nice to get the perspective nationwide as to the conservatives that are engaged and hear what's going on in their states, meet other people, and be able to have those connections so that when we're back in Vermont, we can continue to network out.
One of the things that Vermonters noticed last night that was center stage was Susie Hudson, your national committee woman, who did the roll call vote. How exciting was that for Vermont?
Oh, it was very exciting for Vermont. So Vermont, actually, so we have state committee man and state committee woman, as every state does, and both of ours were on stage yesterday. So Susie is secretary of the she's secretary of the RNC, and she's also secretary of the convention happenings. So she was on stage on Monday and, you know, announcing some of the process for the day, and then she was on stage yesterday doing the roll call. Jay Shepard was on stage doing a prayer last night, and he's our committee man for the state. So I don't know how many states, certainly not every state in the country, could say that they've had two people on stage during this convention. So it's pretty exciting for us.
Don, what's impressed you most about the convention so far? What have you, or about what you've experienced in Cleveland?
The energy, with the convention itself, just amazingly smoothly run. The operations have been fabulous. We put together our Vermont convention this year, which had, you know, about 600 or 700 people. And just, you know, I was part of planning for that. So I look at this and say, oh my gosh, how do they put something this massive together. And it has run so smoothly. You know, yesterday we get off the bus and we're in the building within about 10 minutes. Security didn't hold us up. It was just a very steady stream. Once we're in there, we're right next to the ball field and the queue, which is the Quicken Loan Arena. And they're essentially connected. If anybody's been to Cleveland, they know that. And in the middle, there's an area for food, et cetera. So once we get in, we are able to just mill about in a totally secure environment. In fact, we were saying this morning, we haven't seen the protesters. We hear that they're here. We see it on the news, but they are away from us. We actually even forgot that that might be going on outside. It has not been a factor.
Some of the national stories that we read say that Trump has been tripped up by early mistakes in the convention, whether it is going after John Kasich in the first hours of the convention, or whether it's stepping on some of his more powerful speakers by going on Bill O'Reilly when Patricia Smith was speaking about her son who was killed in Benghazi, to the kind of being caught flat-footed on the rules challenge. Do you see if the Trump campaign, do you feel the Trump campaign is up to the challenge that's going to be coming in a general election?
I think they definitely are. Some of the things that you just named, I wasn't even aware of. You know, we haven't really had time to watch the general news. The media outnumbers the rest of us here. It's kind of an interesting dynamic, actually, milling about. I think they say there's 15,000 media or so. So I don't say they outnumber the rest of us, but they outnumber the actual delegates that are on the floor. That's a very interesting dynamic for us. As for whether, I mean, it's clear from just the putting together of this convention to me, Donald Trump has the ability to organize things. Does everything go perfectly? Can you anticipate, you know, every element of it so that you don't make a misstep that the media might be able to pick up? There's no way that can be done. So I definitely think that he has the skills to put together the team to get to the election and quite likely to get elected. His son was talking last night. Actually, every one of his kids and those who have spoken that seem to know him the best, they consistently talk about he is someone who, when he puts his mind to it, he's going to get it done. And I have been watching that through this election cycle, wondering if that dynamic is not going to come into play here. He's going to figure out how to win this election. It'll be curious to see if he can bring his experience into the political world and get that done.
One of the things I want to do is turn to Vermont and Vermont politics when we come back. I'm going to take a short break, Don, and then I'll be right back with you. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're speaking with Don Tarrow, who's the finance chair of the Vermont Republican Party. Don, what does a finance chair do?
We raise money. So I get to go out and tell the story of what the Vermont Republican Party is working to do to get more Republicans elected in Vermont. And I'm having a good time doing it, and there's a lot of interest in this state to see more balance. I'm getting a sense that people out there are tired of what everybody's calling one-party rule and are concerned about the policy that's been creating. So there's a lot of energy. So I'm enjoying telling the story, and people are stepping up and supporting what we're doing.
What is the Republican Party doing to get people elected?
We are laser-focused on our effort to identify potential voters in the state. So we are all about an exercise in turning out voters. We call it a get out the vote effort. And what that means is really engaging lots of volunteers. A lot of the candidates build teams who will come and volunteer their time. We do a lot of phone banking and reaching out to Vermonters, asking questions so that we can understand where their interests are and if they're interested in supporting Vermont Republicans. And then as we get to the election, we will be reaching out to those folks directly to inspire them to vote, because there's a lot of people that say, yes, I want change, and yes, I want to support this person or another person, but my vote doesn't count. And it's really our job to help them understand that it does count. And sometimes it's only a couple of votes that make a difference, and that they really need to show up at the primary on August 9th and then at the election on November 8th.
Many claim that in the governor's race, there's a negative campaign going on. Does that concern you? Does it hurt your efforts and what you're trying to do?
I don't think so. It's politics, you know, and you'll hear anybody close to politics, I hear them say, you know, negative campaigning works. And then pretty consistently, you hear Vermonters say, it might work, but it doesn't work in Vermont. I don't know. I don't have an opinion on that. I don't personally like it. It's not what attracts me to a candidate. But at the same time, that's not true for everyone. So we're going to see in the primary what's going to come out. You know, our governor's primary is in particular what you're speaking to. The polls suggest, you know, there's only one poll. I don't know what the parties have been, what the candidates have been doing for polling. There was that one poll released within the last couple of weeks that suggested Phil Scott was ahead by 40-some-odd points, I think. I don't know. I think Vermonters, sometimes when you do polls, might be close to the vest. And when you actually get to primary day, I think it will be closer than people think.
What is the number one issue you think confronting Vermonters?
Jobs and the economy. I think the cost of living. I think people are really concerned about the level of property taxes, access to good jobs, being able to keep the right demographic in the state. You know, we need young folks who want to stay here and build a family and be employed and be adding to our tax base. I think there's a lot of concern that there's too many young folks that are just leaving after college. And then there's too many on the other end of the spectrum that might be leaving the state because of some of the policies that we have from a tax standpoint. So jobs and the economy, that's our number one message.
And why do you think Republicans will be successful this election cycle?
Because Vermonters want to see more balance. So we have polled in the last couple of years to test that. And we found in the last poll that we did, which was now about 2 years ago, even a quarter of Democrats said that they wanted more balance in the state, that they weren't excited with a one-party rule. And that suggested to us that there's a lot of interest in supporting Republicans. You're seeing it with Phil Scott. There's a number of Democrats that have come out supporting the balance that Phil Scott might bring to the discussion.
What's the greatest misconception of Republicans, especially here in Vermont?
That we don't have a heart. I think labels are very divisive, and I think what's most frustrating to Republicans is to see the power that the media has to really convey this persona of people who don't care, and that's really frustrating. You know, I'm a business owner, and when I look at the people that we employ and how we try to support them as best we can with the wages that we pay or other things, you know, we're close to them and we know what's going on in their lives, and we try to support them with what they might need for time off or other benefits, or, you know, and we we bring people together and try to build a community in our company. And when I describe some of these things to other people, they look at me and say, oh gosh, you sound like a Democrat, but aren't you a Republican? And I'm just sort of appalled that those are the labels and the distinctions that we have. That's what I hear most when I'm out talking with other Republicans in the state, that they just don't appreciate being labeled in that way.
And how do you dissuade a public from that image, from those labels?
That's very hard to do. Media is extremely powerful. So, you know, I think we do it, you know, there's much more of a grassroots effort, and technology hopefully is going to continue to change this in time. You know, I'd like to think the media will have less power. I don't know if that will be true, but certainly the individual has more power as we increasingly have smartphones and we have this power right at our fingertips and we have social media and we have the ability to, you know, convey very directly what Republicans stand for and the conservative values that are important to us and that we believe will help build up everyone. Prosperity for everyone is a fabulous goal. The individual has amazing powers, and I think Republicans want to find ways to strengthen the individual and help people through our education system and through our financial system be able to have people really realize their personal abilities and accomplishments and the ability to be successful to whatever level they want to be successful. The opportunity in this country is amazing, and that's what Republicans are for, and we, I think, are doing a pretty good job getting that message out. I mean, you're seeing it at the national level. You know, the polls right now for Trump versus Clinton are about 50-50. So I think the country is definitely interested in making a change potentially in November.
So, Don, what I took from all of that is that you want me to be less powerful.
I want you to be less powerful. Because you are media. Absolutely.
I got about 30 seconds. What do you want Vermonters to know about the Republican Party?
Oh, that we are strong in Vermont and we are interested in making Vermont the keeping Vermont with its strong value of independence and strengthening the individual and making Vermont increasingly affordable so that the people who've lived in Vermont for years can continue to be in Vermont and raise their next generations and not feel like they have to look elsewhere.
Donna, just in the few seconds that I have left, what's on your agenda for today?
Today, well, we're actually headed to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for some event within the next hour. And then we don't kick off until this evening. We'll be back at the arena tonight for another lineup of speakers. And tonight will be the vice presidential candidate. So we look forward to seeing what he has to say. Apparently, that's always the highlight of a convention. I've certainly always watched them on TV and looked forward to that. So it'll be a great evening.
Don Terrell, finance chair of the Vermont Republican Party, speaking to us from Cleveland. Thank you, Don.
Thanks, Mike. Have a great day.
Same to you. Don Terrell, coming up, what we'll do is speak with our friends at Talk Media News, and then I'll open up the phone lines to ask you to share your opinions of the Republican National Convention, as well as the Vermont governor's race, including Sue Minter's statement that gun control will be her top priority. Do you agree with that as being the top priority? And Bruce Lisman spending what, maybe $2 million. Is it helping him? So coming up, we'll talk about that. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV News Radio on the Friendly Pioneer, celebrating its 85th year anniversary this year. 85 years WDEV News Radio, celebrating the future. WDEV AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury and Montpelier, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Island Pond. Of course, we're streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. I'm Mike Smith. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We turn our attention back to the convention, and on the line is our colleague at Talk Media News, Justin Duckham. Justin, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Great to be here. How are you?
I am fine, thank you. Question I have is, how is Trump going to unite the Republicans at the convention?
You know, that's a very good question, and I think a lot of that is going to be on display. Not so much during his speech Thursday night, but tonight. Mike Pence was very widely seen as the person who could really unite the party. He was somebody who was not Chris Christie, somebody who was not Newt Gingrich, somebody who can make a lot of the people who are still on the fence comfortable that there would be somebody in the administration who has some congressional experience, somebody who has executive leadership and whatnot, somebody who understands the issues a lot more than a relative outsider like Donald Trump would. And I think that's going to be the message that we're going to be hearing from him. We've heard that coming from kind of behind the scenes. There was apparently some reports that Trump was really wavering against Pence until he was reminded that this was a necessary step in order to bring the party together. So I think a large portion of whether or not we're actually going to see any Republican unity is going to be coming from this speech this evening.
One of the things that will be a topic of conversation tonight will be what Ted Cruz will say. What will he say?
That's a good question. The theme of tonight is Make America First Again. So this is probably going to be a lot of messaging about the loss of American exceptionalism under Obama, this notion of leading from behind that a lot of Republicans have talked about. So if Ted Cruz stays on script, that's probably going to be the focus of it. There's going to be a lot of people are going to be watching to see what Ted Cruz is going to say, primarily because, you know, frankly, he has had a lot of his allies sort of pushing back against the Trump machine over here. We aren't seeing the Never Trump movement taking the big firework-causing genetic steps that a lot of people saw. But we did see Ken Cuccinelli and Mike Lee, both of whom are very loyal to Ted Cruz, trying to gum up the works for a good portion of time over here. So, while we saw Ben Carson going wildly off script last night, I think there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be watching very closely to see, if Ted Cruz stays on message, and if not, what exactly he may put forward.
Does Donald Trump need a better campaign team, given what we've seen at the convention as he goes into the general election? What we've seen is sort of a misstep right in the first hours going after John Kasich. It didn't seem, and the Wall Street Journal had an editorial today that said, the Cleveland Fight Club, why would you come out swinging against a popular governor in Ohio? The sort of being caught flat-footed on what you just said, some of the maneuvering that was going on in terms of rules, sort of stepping on messages right and left, particularly the message of Patricia Smith that seemed to would have helped Trump because she went so aggressively after Clinton. And then, of course, the famous speech by Trump's wife, who had a few passages by Michelle Obama in it. What's your estimation, just looking at the what's happening at the convention? Is the campaign up to the task of taking on Hillary Clinton in the general election?
Well, I think these are largely unforced errors, which is really making a lot of people nervous and raising speculation over what the general campaign is going to look like. We know the RNC has taken the reins over a lot of the Trump machine, but there still is a very strong insular culture within the Trump team that seems to be winning a lot of these judgment calls. Ryan Priebus has come out and said that there's going to be a big minority outreach proposal that Trump's going to be moving forward with. We haven't seen that same kind of messaging coming out from the Trump campaign. But following sort of the major missteps that we've seen at this convention, I would not be surprised if they're going to be more willing to take some input from the RNC, particularly considering that this is going to be a 50-state race, something that we have not seen the Trump campaign necessarily do in such a, truncated amount of time, and something that they're really going to need a larger network to achieve. So I think there's a problem with that. I think also a lot of the people who are sort of the old school party stalwarts may not necessarily come out for Donald Trump. Even at the convention here, we're not necessarily, seeing a lot of the old school sort of RNC Republican figures that we've seen in the past, the people who really call the shots here. A lot of them had scheduling conflicts, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, suggesting that they're not going to be here. And that's sort of taking a toll on the, pageantry that we're seeing over here, the fact that this isn't necessarily the Republican A-team.
Following up on that, Justin, and we're speaking with Justin Duckham from Talk Media News. Following up on that, at a convention, what you do is solidify your core Republicans. You try to appeal to independents, and you try to convert some of the Democrats that voted for Barack Obama in the last election away from Hillary Clinton. It seems like this convention has almost been exclusively on trying to shore up core Republicans. Does that bode well for Trump?
It does not. No, it kind of shows the fact that he's fighting a war on two fronts. He simultaneously has to, reach out to a broader cross-section of America while trying to, either shore up or, maintain the base that he already has. So I think that's, something that no candidate necessarily wants to be in. Hillary Clinton suffers from that to a certain extent, especially earlier on in the primary season when she was trying to appeal to more Bernie Sanders supporters. And frankly, she was able to navigate those waters a little bit better than Trump. She was able to speak to messages that appealed both to moderate Democrats as well as more progressives by opposing the Trans-Pacific Partnership or the Keystone Pipeline or whatnot. And to a large extent, it looks like that sort of issue is largely quelled. We're going to see that on full display when it comes to the Democratic convention. But we do, of course, have Trump, who needs to expand his coalition. If we look at 2012, look at 2008, these are broad cross-sections of America that are coming out to elect a president, and Trump just does not have that that sort of support ready to go.
Trump campaign says that he's going to reintroduce himself tomorrow night. What does that mean?
That's anybody's guess. We've seen Trump reintroduce himself a number of times now, and every time that's sort of been followed by Trump going back to just regular old Trump. You know, we saw him addressing the AIPAC conference, giving a very high-profile foreign policy speech over there, and then immediately after that, he started going after Ted Cruz's wife. So this is just sort of this game that we're seeing with Trump, wherein this is the new Trump, followed immediately after, signs of the old Trump. And, considering that he's been sort of somebody who follows patterns, I don't really buy this reintroduction.
Justin, you can't expect him to change positions because that would just infuriate his supporters at that point, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. He does have a very passionate base, so there may be some truth to the fact that he says he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and not lose any votes. But at the end of the day, there are people who are attracted to the messages he put out, who are very excited by his Muslim ban and whatnot, who are very excited about being a strong arm on immigration. And we've seen in the past when candidates wander away from that message and that hurts them politically. Rick Perry is a very good example of that. He was somebody who was adored by the conservative movement until during a debate that he spoke kind of softly on immigration, and that sort of spelled the end of his campaign before it went off the rails. So I think there's probably not going to be a change of position, but at least a softening in tone. Whether or not that's going to excite anybody, that remains to be seen, but he's, I guess, going to give it a shot.
And just to my last question here, last night Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, spoke at the convention. One of the things that I was curious about, a Washington Post article said that Christie is peeved about not being the vice presidential candidate. Did he show any sort of animosity last night?
I don't think he saw animosity over that, but I think he's really aiming for the consolation prize right now, which is to be attorney general. I think he realizes if he can't serve as VP, he will have a very successful future serving as sort of the attack dog to the administration at the Justice Department. And judging from that mock trial, he's somebody who can deliver a lot of good red meat, somebody who would probably be the ideal prosecutor for a Donald Trump-like figure, and that came across very very strongly last night.
Justin Duncombe, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Mike. You have a good one.
Thank you. Justin Duncombe, Talk Media News. Coming up, your phone calls. We'll be talking about ask you to share your opinions about the Republican National Convention, as well as the Vermont governor's race, including Sue Minter's statement that gun control will be her top priority. Do you agree with that, or do you disagree with that? And Bruce Lissman spending what may be $2 million in a primary, the most expensive governor's race by far, just in the primary. Is it helping him? Your comments, your opinions, your questions. When we come back, this is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. Let's open up the next 40 minutes to your phone calls. And what I'm particularly interested in is what your opinion is about the Republican National Convention. Is the GOP nominee, Donald Trump, getting the positive bounce from the convention? That's normal, usually, to get a positive bounce. Certainly today's Rutland Herald and Times Argus editorial said if Trump can't manage the convention, how can he manage the nation? His campaign seems to be chaotic, poorly managed, and dysfunctional on some issues. And that the editorial went on to say that Trump is a con artist. The Wall Street Journal asked, in essence, why? Why is the Trump campaign picking a fight with other Republicans, in particular John Kasich, the governor of Ohio? So we're talking about that and the governor's race. Two things caught some interest here. One, Sue Minter's statement saying that gun control is a top priority. And Bruce Lisman spending probably $2 million in a primary, the most ever for a governor candidate, certainly in a primary. Your opinions, your comments, your concerns certainly are welcome. So give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. I enjoy this portion when I open up the phone lines because I get to hear from you. So let's go to the phone lines and Bill from Barry. Bill, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Something that bothers me the most right now. The first thing I want to say before I say anything else is that I have not spoken with Phil Scott since Bruce Lipsman started his negative campaign. Now, I am sitting here with two mailings. Came from two different people. Phil Scott sent one, and Bruce Lipsman sent the other. And Phil Scott, I'll start first. It said, Governor Douglas endorses Phil Scott for governor. Make your plan to vote today. And I might just take my wife down to the town hall here and vote this morning. But anyway, he says nothing negative about his opponent in that ad. But Lipsman said everything negative. And here's what I saw. Elected together, served together, failed together. That's Peter Shulman and Phil Scott. The first statement I want to make is that when you have been a public servant for many, many, many years, like Phil Scott has, he has his own business, he has to live off his own business and made it and has a successful business. And I will say I have some tires on my vehicle that are Wheels for Warmth tires. He's done a lot of good things for the state, but I don't want to go into that. What I want to say is that the incumbent, or not, he's not an incumbent, but he served. He has a lot of records that can be brought up, how he voted. But instead of saying how he was elected together, served together, and failed together, that is not true. I heard both ads this morning on your station, Phil Scott's. So he's sort of fighting back. He's saying that this isn't, it was misleading. And that misleading are very mild words to what Bruce Lipsman has done. He's gone to New York, made a lot of money, which is, I admire him for that. And I was admiring him until he started this thing. But to use that money, go after to slam somebody else, and outright, whether it is he come in with true facts, but he doesn't give all the true facts. And so this is really, in my way, if this was in court, I think I would call it perjury. But it isn't, and this is one reason why I think that I sure hope that the Vermonters understand that doing this, it gives a bad name to Vermont, it gives a bad name to the Republican Party, and I wouldn't, of course I would not vote for Lipsman, even if he was the only candidate. I'd like to have other people mention, talk about this, because I think this is terrible.
Thanks, Bill, for your phone call. Certainly, it has caught the attention, how Bruce Lipsman is campaigning among many people. And we're talking about two things today. I'd be interested in your phone calls at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. We're talking about the fact that the governor's race. A couple of things strike you, and certainly this struck Bill, is that Bruce Lipsman is spending probably about $2 million in a primary, the most ever for a gubernatorial candidate, and has decided to attack Phil Scott in a negative way, calling Phil Scott Shumlin's wingman. Is it working? Be interested in your phone calls. Bill says it's not. The other thing is Sue Mentor's statement saying that gun control will be her top priority as governor. Should that be the top priority, or should jobs and the economy be the number one issue, given that in most polls it rates the highest in the minds of Vermonters? Be interested in your phone calls on that. Plus, the Republican National Convention. Is the GOP nominee, Donald Trump, getting the positive bounce from the convention that is normal? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Dale in Burlington. Dale, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Just a few comments on all two or three of the subjects. I agree with Bill from Barry. I think Lissman is shooting himself in the foot, pretty much. It's a pathetic campaign that he's running. That's my opinion. I've talked to others that surprise me with their attitude, that say that they think it's working, and they're thinking very seriously about voting for Lissman versus Scott, which concerns me. But I think overall, I think it's going to be a failure. I'll compare the failure to Wendy Wilton's tactics against Beth Pearce a few years ago, when she actually went totally bonkers in a negative way on Beth Pearce, and that totally backfired, and it was unnecessary, and it was disgusting campaigning, as well as what Matt Dunn did a few years back to Phil Scott, and I guess it was Lieutenant Governor's race, with the empty office and all that.
That was with Brian Doobie, Dale.
I was with Brian. You're right. You're absolutely right. I'm sorry. Time passes so quickly. So, you know, and that obviously failed, and that was totally negative, and that was a pathetic ad. So far, it looks like Matt has kind of figured out that that really isn't the way to be campaigning, and I haven't seen him use that tactic so far this time. Maybe he has. As far as Sue Minner's position on gun control, I think she's totally way off to the left. Obviously, it's not the biggest issue facing Vermont by any stretch of the imagination. We have so many more major issues that are affecting us every day on a state level that gun control is not one of them. If anything, the opiate addiction problem, with people delivering the drugs from New York, coming up well-armed, making their distribution, you know, we're not going to get the guns away from them. So then we're not going to be left with anything to protect ourselves, with her ideas and attitudes. And I personally, I like Sue Mentor. I think she's done fine work in other areas, but I think she's way out in left field on this one.
Thank you, Dale.
Let me catch my breath a minute, and I'll go national.
Okay, quickly, because I've got calls really backed up here.
Trump's performance this week is just another part of his having no plans on serving as president of the United States. He's trying to find every possible way that he can lose the election. Now he brings his wife into it so he can blame her on it, because he uses everybody around him. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dale, for your phone call. One thing I just wanted to mention, Sue Mentor said, people say we don't have a problem here in Vermont, but I know we do, and it is behind closed doors, and it's the issue of domestic violence. If elected, Mentor said she will push to establish universal background checks for all gun sales in Vermont. My goal is not to take away guns from law-abiding citizens who passed a background check. It's to take it away from those who can't. She also, in the article, talks about putting a ban on assault weapons as governor if the legislature moves a bill. So we're talking about Bruce Lissman spending $2 million on what many claim is a negative campaign, and many of you have said that it isn't working, or if it's working, it shouldn't be done in Vermont. And Sue Mentor saying that gun control is a top priority if she is a elected governor. We're also talking about the Republican National Convention. Is the GOP nominee, Donald Trump, getting the positive bounce from the convention That is normal. Let's go to Joanne in Williston. Joanne, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Back in 1998, my family and I went to New York City. My niece was showing a dog at the Westminster Dog Show, and we stayed at the Trump Towers. It was a beautiful hotel. And I just happened to ask a lady who was cleaning a stairwell what it was like to work for Donald Trump. And she said he was wonderful to the employees, and it was such a privilege to work for him. I think that says so much about the man. And as for the convention, I saw, not all of it, of course, but it was so uplifting and wonderful. We live in such a great country that we can have a republic, not a democracy, a republic. And so I just wanted to add that about Donald Trump.
Thank you, Joanne, for your phone call. Thank you, Joanne, for your phone call. Let's go to Rick in Huntington. Rick, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Just quickly on the Sue Minter campaign here, it does seem that she's completely ignoring what Vermonters have been saying for years now as far as the biggest problem being affordability, high property taxes. But I think that in itself is a form of gun control. By the time you get done paying your property taxes and other taxes in Vermont, you don't really have a lot of money left at the end of the month to buy a gun anyhow. One thing I wanted to bring up, if I can change the subject a little bit.
But first of all, Rick, that's one of the best analogies I've heard in a long time. But go ahead.
Maybe she hadn't thought of that, but that's a strategy in itself. Interesting phenomenon that I've observed. I don't know that there's any rhyme or reason to it. I don't know if I'm the only person that has observed this. I know a while ago when the Vermont Quarter came out, there was a little bit of a hubbub about the way Camel's Hump was represented and which way it faced, you know, and you had people saying it on the Quarter, it's viewed, I believe, from the east, whereas most of the area of the state of Vermont would view it from. Some people got up, some, let's call them Chittenden-centric people, made a little bit of a hubbub saying this isn't the way the hump looks, you know, to most of the population of Vermont. It should be turned the other way. So I know there was another issue 10 years ago or something where this kind of came up, where somebody had used a profile of the hump to represent something. But anyway, if you've noticed any of Dave Zuckerman's yard signs, half of them that I've seen, the hump is facing one way with a cliff to the left, and half of them, and I see him right in Hinesburg, his hometown, some of them have the cliff facing to the right. I don't know if there's a rhyme or reason to this. I don't know if somebody at the print shop in two different batches put the screen print in the wrong way or something. I don't know if there's a strategy, and he meant to put the ones viewed from the east distributed to the eastern part of the state and vice versa. I don't know if anybody else has even noticed this, but take a look around at Dave Zuckerman's signs. I mean, it's nice to put the camel's hump, especially if you're a guy from New Jersey. You want to put something Vermont-y on your sign when you're running for office, but it's just an odd little phenomenon. I don't know if anyone else has taken notice of it.
Thanks, Rick, for your phone call. Obviously, he doesn't want to offend anybody. If you have a belief that it should be viewed from one way or the other, I guess David Zuckerman is making sure that everybody's view of the hump, camel's hump, is represented. Let's go to Ruth and Sheldon. Ruth, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Yes, I thought it was interesting when you were interviewing Dawn, remember her last name.
Yeah, Dawn Terrell.
That she said there was more media at the convention than there was delegates. Yeah. I thought that was real interesting, and I am very disappointed with the media coverage of the convention.
In what way, Ruth?
Particularly with CBS and NBC, I don't have cable TV, so those are the stations that I can see. They're not reporting the news. They're criticizing everything about Trump, everything that anybody says or does. And I'm not necessarily a Trump supporter, but I cannot stand the way they're making fun of everybody who's at the Republican convention. And I switched. Last night I was trying to watch it. I thought Donald Trump Jr. gave an excellent speech. Are they talking about that? No. And I switched from CBS to NBC, and then I even switched to PBS, and they're all criticizing everything that's being said or done, and it's just their opinions. They're not reporting what's actually happening, and I'm very upset about it.
Thank you, Ruth, for your phone call. I appreciate your phone call. When we come back, we'll take more of your phone calls. We're talking about the Republican National Convention. We're talking about the governor's race, and in some cases, we're talking about which way Camel's Hump should be facing. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're talking about a number of subjects in the next 20 minutes, and your opinion, your phone calls are certainly welcome. Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. We're talking about the Republican National Convention. Is the GOP nominee Donald Trump getting the positive bounce from the convention that is normal? And the governor's race. Two things have caught our interest as Vermonters. Sue Minter's statement saying that gun control is the top priority. Is gun control the top priority for you? Or are other issues the top priority, namely jobs and the economy? And Bruce Lisman spending probably $2 million in the primary, the most ever for a governor candidate in a primary. Is his negative tax on Phil Scott working? And he hasn't said anything about whether he supports Donald Trump. He claims to be a typical politician, but he ducks that issue, which is a typical politician move. So your phone calls are appreciated. Let's go to Fred in Newberry. Fred, you're on Open Mic. Fred, if you could make it quick, I've got a slew of phone calls here. I'd appreciate it.
Okay, it's just a quick one. Maybe you can answer it for me. Is the presidential election in the United States a de facto international election via contributions? A guy from, say, Germany can write a check to the Trump campaign or the Clinton campaign.
Well, Fred, thank you for the phone call. I would suspect anybody could write a check for anything, but I'm not sure if that is the case or not. Let me check. I'll get back to you. Rob in North Carolina. Rob, you're on Open Mic. Good morning. Rob? Hello, Rob.
Can you hear me, Mike?
I can. Go ahead.
A couple things. Two things. First of all, the topics come up. Can the Trump campaign run an effective campaign? The mistakes that they seem to be making. But I would ask, I think, a better question. Is Hillary Clinton capable of running a fair presidency? She was in the State Department, correct? And she wasn't even able to handle her emails correctly. And she lied about it for months, and then it was uncovered that she did lie, and she did break some rules, security rules, but she's not prosecuted. I'd say she could not handle governing this country with that record. And the other thing is, Hillary Clinton, back in February of 2008, accused Barack Obama of plagiarizing a Deval Patrick speech that he had made a couple years before. And that fizzled out so fast, I've been reading about it. The press never went after it. They never highlighted it. And this morning on CBS, most of the time spent about the convention was, again, about the so-called plagiarism. Can we just let this thing die a death?
Rob, can you answer me this? Why did the plagiarism thing even happen in the first place? I mean, that is the basic question, and that does lead to the campaign not vetting these things properly, doesn't it?
Well, mistakes are made, but would anyone even know if the Clinton machine and its oppositional research team wasn't doing this? Clinton did this with Barack Obama. She called him out.
But this is politics, isn't it?
And he accused her of plagiarism. He found a couple of things that she had done. But that fizzled out. The liberal press didn't care. Their heroes were up, and they wanted either one of them to be elected. And now we keep hearing about it. I think it's a non-issue. I don't care how it happened. I think she gave a great speech. She had a great presence. She was positive. And to keep dribbling over this by the liberal media, it's absurd. Let's move on here. There's bigger issues. We've got police being shot. We've got investigations. And I don't hear any about that this morning on any of the major news networks. It's a shameful, Mike.
Yeah, I think this is going to fizzle out pretty fast as it is. Thanks, Rob, for your phone call. Let's go to Ann in Waterbury. Ann, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Camel Hump. From the Montpelier side of the state, it's known as Camel Hump. From the Burlington Lake Champlain side, it's the Couching Lion. So it depends upon which side of the state you live on.
Thanks, Ann. I, to be honest, I've never heard it called the Couching Lion, but you know what?
No, that's what Champlain called it when he came down from Quebec in Montreal.
That was
the original name.
Thank you, Ann. That's great information, and I really appreciate you giving us a call. So, the question is, Republican National Convention, is the GOP nominee Donald Trump getting the positive bounce from the convention that is normal with a party convention? And also, the gubernatorial campaign, really interested in your opinions, your comments, your questions about two campaigns in particular. Sue Mentor's statement saying that gun control is her top priority as governor. Do you think that is the top priority of most Vermonters? Or is it jobs and the economy like most polls say? And Bruce Lissman spending probably $2 million in a primary, the most ever for a governor candidate in a primary. Is his negative attacks against Phil Scott, basically calling Phil Scott Shumlin's wingman, are they working? Also, what's interesting to me is that he claims, Bruce Lissman is claiming that he's not a typical politician, but then he ducks a question, whether he supports Donald Trump, which, if you think about it, is a typical political politician move. So, asking the questions today, what do you think? Donald Trump, is he getting the positive bounce? Sue Mentor, is gun control the top priority of a governor in this state? Is Bruce Lissman flushing his $2 million down the toilet by going negative after Phil Scott? It is an interesting time. And what I'll do is take your phone calls at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255 right after this. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We've opened up the phone lines for your phone calls. We're asking several questions today. Republican National Convention, is the GOP nominee Donald Trump getting the positive bounce from the convention that is normal? A lot of people are blaming the media for not giving the positive bounce that is normal. Is that the case or not? And two things that have caught the interest of Vermonters out there. Sue Mentor's statement saying that gun control will be her top priority as governor. Is gun control more of a priority than jobs in the economy, which is the number one issue on most Vermonters' minds, according to most polls? And Bruce Lissman spending probably $2 million in the primary, the most ever for a gubernatorial candidate. And the question is, spending $2 million, is it making any difference in his effort to win the governor's race? Is his negative attacks on Phil Scott working? Basically, he's calling Scott Shumlin's wingman. And is that working? Sometimes it's hard for those sort of things to stick in a small state because you know your politicians. He also has been ducking the question about whether he supports Donald Trump or not. So those are the questions. If you wish to get in here, we've got about 9 minutes left. 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Turning to the Republican National convention. As I said in the beginning, the Rutland Herald Times Argus editorial today said that if Trump can't manage the convention, how can he manage the nation? That was the miscues that have happened in the Trump campaign in describing the convention as chaotic, poorly managed, and dysfunctional, is how the Rutland Herald Times Argus described it. And the Wall Street Journal, if you think the Rutland Herald Times Argus may have a liberal opinion, then you go to the Wall Street Journal, and it says, in essence, in their editorial, why? Why pick a fight with other Republicans when you need Republicans in order to win the general election? And what they were referring to is the Trump campaign at the outset of the convention picking a fight with John Kasich, a very popular governor in Ohio. And what sense did that make? It's almost like they couldn't help themselves. But Trump needs Ohio in order to win the presidency. Let's go back to the phones and let's go to Betty in Barry. Betty, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Oh, good morning to you. I have just a quick comment about the governor's race. I don't know about negative ads. I really don't really put much stock into that. I personally just listen to what each person stands for. But I also have an opinion about Phil Scott. Now, I remember Phil Scott when he first ran for Senate, and I really thought at that time when I went to him about an issue that he was very, very intensive, and he was very concerned about, you know, my problem, and I thought he said he would do the best he could, and I believe he did. At this particular time, I had another issue a number of years later when he became governor. I think it was last year. To me... his whole rapport had changed. I didn't feel the same way about him as I did in when I had went to him when he was senator. So I kind of base it on how he came across to me that particular time, which I didn't feel that he really was that concerned about my issue. And, you know, that was my opinion. Am I going to vote for him? No, I'm not going to vote for him. Would I have voted for him before? Yeah, I probably would have.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Betty. I appreciate your phone call.
Okay.
He was lieutenant governor when you went to him, and you didn't think he gave the best response that you thought he should, or the attention that he should have to your issue, which will turn off some voters if that is the case. So thank you for your phone call, Betty. Back to the convention. Let's talk about the convention for a little bit, because I think, and I'm going to upset some of you Trump supporters in the next few minutes here that I have left, but I think this is a missed opportunity for Trump. He had an opportunity to get a very big bounce off this election. And if you go back, the single most important issue is uniting the Republican Party. Of course, also, that takes a strategy and a competent campaign staff to achieve. But once it has been accomplished, the next important goal is to reach outside of the party and seek those prospective new voters, as well as those voters who voted for the opposite party in the previous presidential election. Who's been successful at doing that? Well, Ronald Reagan was successful at doing that. And George H.W. Bush, the first Bush, was successful at doing it because he rode Reagan's coattails, but lost conservative Republicans for breaking a convention promise not to raise taxes. And Bob Dole was never won the growing number of conservatives in his party. George W. Bush was able to unite the party, but John McCain and Mitt Romney were not. And what did Mitt Romney do in the first hours of the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, as the Wall Street Journal pointed out? His campaign went out of their way to hurl insults at Governor John Kasich. And that made absolutely no sense, because Kasich is a popular governor in Ohio, a state that Trump badly needs in order to win. And Trump's peeved off at Kasich because he hasn't come out and supported him. But what is it going to gain you to get in an argument with him in order to win him over? You know, normally this shouldn't be an issue for a successful candidate. Uniting the party should be the least concern at the national convention. You should be going after your opponent, pounding your opponent. And when you do pound your opponent, you should do it in an effective way. And yet, I've brought this up before. One of the most effective speakers at the convention was Patricia Smith, whose son died in Benghazi on the attack of the diplomatic compound in Benghazi. She was very articulate. She went after Hillary Clinton. And she said Hillary Clinton is not competent. And that incompetency resulted in the death of her son. That was the most powerful statement in this whole convention. And yet, what did Trump do? He goes on Bill O'Reilly on Fox, and it just quashes the message. So the campaign seems to be all over the place. Doesn't know what the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. And if they are going to win, and they have some issues that they can win on, if they are going to win against Hillary Clinton, and Hillary Clinton is not popular, as some of you callers have pointed out, then they got to get better. Because right now they're not very good. And it's a 50-state campaign. And the question is Trump willing and able to move in a fashion that will significantly change his campaign in quick order? Many are saying no. And one of the callers talked about the talking heads on CBS and NBC, where many are saying no. Certainly Hillary Clinton is banking on that he won't. Hey, I want to thank all our guests today. I mean, Jasper Craven from Vermont Digger, calling in and talking about Old Town Media and how millions in media placement fees for the Sanders campaign went to a small firm that many have never heard of. You got to read that piece in Vermont Digger. It's really fascinating, and he did a very, very good job in sort of highlighting what's going on. Also, I want to thank Don Terrell, the finance chair from the Vermont Republican Party, very articulate woman in terms of what she is hoping that Vermonters learn about candidates. Tomorrow, AARP State Director Greg Marshallton on scams, and there's a lot of scams going on out there. I've had two phone calls with scams, and a Norwich professor talking about the events in Turkey. I think we've sort of pushed those to the side, but big events going on in Turkey. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV News Radio on the Friendly Pioneer, celebrating its 85th year anniversary this year. 85 years, WDEV News Radio, celebrating the future. AM 550 WDEV broadcasting from Waterbury and Montpelier, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Island Pond. Of course, streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. I'm Mike Smith. Thank you all for your phone calls. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk again tomorrow.
The Open Mic Podcast is brought to you by Hickok Boardman, Dennis Ricker, and Brown.
Find us online at hbinsurance.com. And you're always welcome to visit us on Facebook, in Vermont, online, on the phone. Hickok and Boardman Insurance Group. We are here when you need us.